This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Shyness, How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness by Christopher Lane. Scientific American says, would Henry David Thoreau and Emily Dickinson be given drugs today? Christopher Lane joins me on the long line. Christopher, how are you, sir?
I'm very good, thanks.
It's good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me, if you can, let's start just by telling us, what were you working on? What kind of research were you doing when you realized, oh my gosh, I've got to tell this story?
Well, actually, I was working on a previous book, which was on antisocial behavior in Victorian society. And I was really interested by the way the Victorians tolerated recluses and eccentrics and mavericks. But I began to wonder what would happen in 21st century society with these people. Would they still be tolerated in the same way? And when I asked several leading psychiatrists this question, they said, you know, probably these people would now be medicated. They would all be medicated. And so what I began to wonder was, what was happening to their eccentricities, to their various quirks of the personality, and whether we were, medicating away too much in human behavior. So I went to the American Psychiatric Association archives and looked at the rationale, the justification for including 112 new mental disorders. These were created in 1980 with the third edition of the Diagnostic Bible that they use. And among them was this rather surprising new disorder, social anxiety, and the symptoms included fear of eating alone in a restaurant, concern about hand trembling as you're writing a check, and avoidance of public restrooms. 7 years later, amazingly, the American Psychiatric Association decided to lower the bar even further by including, and I want to quote, anticipated fear that the person may do something or act in a way that will be humiliating or embarrassing. Close quote. That's a statement in the Diagnostic Bible, and I just think it sparked a whole series of questions in my mind as to the reason fear of saying or doing the wrong thing had become a mental illness, a psychiatric disorder.
Amazing. Christopher Lane is with us. He's the author of the book Shyness, and he is a recent recipient of a Guggenheim Fellowship to study psychopharmacology and ethics.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit first, for folks who don't know, explain this Bible that you refer to. What is this book that is published and updated? And before we let you go, we're going to talk about the expected updates that are about to come out. What is this book? Where did it come from? And why is it so powerful?
Well, the book, it's got this arcane title, The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. It sounds completely irrelevant to most people's lives, but it is, in fact, extremely influential. It's the guidebook that's invoked, the reference manual that's invoked in schools, in prisons, in courts, by health insurers and the mental health services. Every time they want to make a diagnosis of a person, they turn to this reference manual, and not only are there a series of codes in it, but also descriptions like the ones that I've read out, where the various people involved can offer a diagnosis, and then the insurance companies will reimburse, and physicians and so on will make a prescription largely for an antidepressant for these anxiety disorders that are listed there, among many other things like personality disorders, the depression, forms of depression, and so on.
It is absolutely it's sort of mind-boggling to think about. Now let's really start exploring some of the things that you dug up in your research.
Sure.
And we want to underscore the fact that this is unprecedented research, that you had access to some stuff that had previously been secret.
That's right.
Some of the things that you discovered in your research on this that you found particularly startling.
Well, the first thing to say is that I was really lucky that the statute of limitations on these papers had just expired, And so technically they're now in the public domain. I was the first to get to review them systematically. What I found, several things. First, the psychiatrist had agreed to listing really dozens of new disorders when there was very little consensus among them that they were disorders at all. In fact, the papers included vehement and angry concerns by experts who denounced the work as scandalous, unprofessional, unethical, often ludicrous. And yet, the disorders nonetheless were listed. 112 of them were created in 1980 with the third edition. What I also discovered was that the psychiatrists had exaggerated minor problems and turned them into issues that really seemed as if they were of epidemic problems. They also pushed their own pet diagnoses, ones that the drug companies often had paid them to research, and in some cases hyped the conclusions, even when these were frequently very modest and involved, in some cases, even just one person treated. And then fourth, and I think most relevant and damaging of all, was simply the role of the drug companies in this, in terms of sponsoring conferences such as the one where panic disorder was approved. Previously, of course, this was simply known as panic, but the desire to turn it into a disorder was based on the fact that there was a drug from Upjohn Pharmaceutical Company, and therefore a representative from that drug company was present and said, the reason we're here is money, and this is why we hope that you go ahead and list this disorder in the manual. And there were many other both hilarious issues and really quite scandalous ones. I mean, one of the most hilarious things was a proposal for a chronic complaint disorder, which, and I'll quote, aimed to pathologize people who grumble about the weather, the energy crisis, and taxes. The person inflicts their, quote, persistent and consistent complaining in a high-pitched whining fashion, which is especially noxious to the listener. There was another proposal for a chronic undifferentiated unhappiness disorder, which just is absolutely incredible.
And those did not make it into the book.
They did not, but quite a few other ones did. I mean, you'll find oppositional disorder, which lists people who are negativistic, disobedient, and ineffective. You'll see passive-aggressive personality disorder, symptoms of which include dawdling and procrastinating over doing the laundry and the shopping.
Oh my God.
You'll find schizoid personality disorder, where the people are said to be humorless or dull. And I also found, I mean, just incredible things like a discussion for avoidant personality disorder, which focused on whether people preferred getting to work by car or on public transportation.
Christopher Lane is the author of the new book, Shyness, How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness, and we'll be giving away a free copy here at the end of the interview. We're honored to have him with us. Christopher, it yeah. sounds almost medieval, doesn't it? It just sounds like, you remember the day when if a kid was left-handed, boy,
yeah.
they were just abnormal and
yeah.
crazy and close to the devil, and you got to force them to use their right hand. And it just sounds so medieval, and yet it's happening right now.
Well, it does sound pretty medieval. It also sounds to some is a little Orwellian or even like something out of Brave New World. When you think that 18.5 million Americans have taken Paxil for social anxiety disorder, the disorder that I was talking about, where the symptoms include fear of eating alone in a restaurant, I mean, that's really serious, not least because Paxil has a really poor track record in terms of side effects and documented cases of people experiencing withdrawal symptoms, really severe withdrawal symptoms, and as many as 1 in 5 patients when they try to come off the drug. So that's a really serious problem.
And explore that for us, the role here, which we have to, and it's in your
yeah.
book, and you,
uh-huh.
with any observer would conclude that the pharmaceutical industry is a critical component in this entire process.
It is.
I mean, if you can go to the government and get legislation to require the government to make it a law that people have to buy your product, you know, like a vaccine or something, this is really amazing.
Well, one of the problems is that is with the FDA. Let's start there, which in 1997, dramatically relaxed its rules on pharmaceutical advertising so that it allowed the drug companies to market to us directly. This was previously forbidden. Let me just give your listeners a sense of the increase in advertising that was spent over that range of years. From 1996, this was a year beforehand, we had 595 million spent on advertising. The year that they relaxed it, it increased to 843 million per year.
Wow.
By the year 2000, total direct-to-consumer spending had reached $2.5 billion, and that was 9 years ago, of course. Today, it's estimated at over $25 billion spent on direct-to-consumer advertising. That's almost $10 million per day. Let's talk about another problem, which is the role of experts and consultants in approving the new drugs. The FDA faces such a problem with conflicts of interest, where these psychiatrists and their researchers are accepting drug company money, that basically the FDA has to presume neutrality now on the basis that these researchers and psychiatrists have ties to all the drug companies, and therefore they're not going to be slanted toward one over the other. So, I mean, it's just an incredible problem for them to try to find experts who do not have ties already to a drug company.
Yeah.
So there is this mutually beneficial relationship that's now almost insurmountable.
And it's well documented, the folks who work at the FDA, the revolving
Absolutely.
Door between the bureaucrats and the pharmaceutical industry.
Absolutely.
They just go back and forth.
And then a third problem, you're totally right on that. A third problem is that the drug companies are, in large numbers of cases, sponsoring the research that's occurring on their product at the universities. And so the researchers face a serious problem when they try to report and publish findings from the drugs that aren't favorable to their sponsor. When the New England Journal of Medicine ran a study on this of the trend, what they found was consistent underreporting over the 17-year period where we've had these SSRI antidepressants on the market. And large numbers of the studies that reported negative findings were simply never published. And those that reported ambiguous findings, often the evidence was tilted more so it was made to seem favorable rather than ambiguous. So we've got a skewing of evidence with the figures that were submitted to the FDA. That's incredibly serious, and of course, it's the reason the drug companies are facing so many lawsuits these days.
We're talking with Christopher Lane. He's a professor at Northwestern University and the recent recipient of a Guggenheim Fellowship. His new book is Shyness: How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness. So, Christopher, tell us now about the new psychiatric Bible, which is coming out soon, is it not?
Yeah. DSM-5 is scheduled for release in 2012, just 3 years from now, and already discussion is underway as to whether to include apathy as a mental disorder, apathy disorder. We also have a serious discussion and quite a push by the American Psychiatric Association to include internet addiction. Overuse of the internet would then be a mental disorder. We have them discussing extreme shopping, something they're describing as relational disorder, something also known as parental alienation syndrome, which is to do with custody cases. Again, you know, involving a great deal of suffering and trauma, but is that really something we want to describe as a mental disorder? We have the same push to include premenstrual dysphoric disorder, sexual addiction, and binge-purge eating disorder. And again, most people would think of binge-purge eating as a psychological issue involving conflict rather than a
psychiatric problem
involving a sort of brain chemistry and dysfunction in the brain.
And what we're seeing, Christopher, if I can just sort of what we're seeing here in right now, I mean, this is not something that's happening years ago or in another country. Right now, in this country, the pharmaceutical industry is going through the universities to turn all of this normal behavior into disorders and craziness so that you need a pill.
Yeah, and I'll tell your listeners something even more alarming. And this was a story that only came out this summer when the previous leader of DSM-3 and was so appalled by the new contract for DSM-5 that he went to Psychiatric News and released wording of the new contract. Basically, the new contract states, this is for people who are working on the next edition, that is, whether to include apathy, overuse of the internet, and so on as disorders. I will not, during the term of this appointment or after, make accessible to anyone in any way or work product, unpublished manuscripts and drafts of other pre-publication materials, group discussions, internal correspondence, information about the development process, and any other written or unwritten information in any form that emanates from or relates to my work with the APA task force or work group. So basically the kind of work that I did in the archives on DSM-3, the 1980 edition, just simply would not be possible according to this contract. Even more alarming, the general public simply can't know what is going to be approved. This is the aim, based on concern that if people knew that apathy was being discussed as a potential mental disorder, there would be outrage, and people would say, "What on earth are you doing in describing the apathetic as mentally ill?"
So they put a gag order on all these psychiatrists and
PhDs.
They
also said if you want to do this work, which is quite prestigious for your career in psychiatry, you must accept only $10,000 in sponsorship from the drug companies. So that's their cutoff point. It's not zero. It's certainly not 2 million, which is quite common, but it's not zero. And so there is a generalized conflict of interest right there.
Well, this is quite, it's so alarming, and I have to say, it's stuff that I've been familiar with as a child with autism. I've been familiar with some of these issues and the role of the pharmaceutical industry and the relationship between the drug companies and our government. Yeah. To me, it's not one of abuse. It's not that they're abusing the system. They are raping and pillaging our system.
Yeah.
And it is frightening. It is frightening.
When people find out that major figures at say, Harvard Medical School have been accepting millions in order to put two-year-olds on antipsychotics for this fabricated disorder, bipolar 2, I think your listeners will be even more appalled. I mean, these are drugs that have not even been approved for use on children. And yet, very, very large numbers of infants have been taking antipsychotics on the basis that they suffer from bipolar 2 and bipolar 3 disorder.
And they're babies.
And they're babies. And yeah. So there's absolutely no way of knowing, whether that diagnosis is reliable, and B, whether the child wouldn't cycle through different moods as part of normal development.
Yeah. Well, Einstein, who didn't speak for many years as a kid, certainly would have been drugged up if he was around today.
It's quite likely, yeah.
Christopher Lane, the new book is Shyness, How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness. This is a very important and critical book, and I want to urge all the listeners to get a copy of this. Christopher, thank you so much for your work on this.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.